been out for a couple months. Although Back by Sierra has been out close to a couple months, so.
Yeah. Well, this is great. I have no control over my tools. I just suddenly, I think it was once I started the Google Hangout. So let me see here.
Donde está Darren?
Credit karma, like I get someone's credit karma. I have two people's banks that send their emails to me.
I do. I get emails from time to time for other Tom Merritts. Occasionally architecture stuff, occasionally church stuff in Minnesota, and an auto dealer in Florida.
We totally need to do a new podcast, Tom, and I think we just get like people just it'd be awesome. Because it'd be like, for example, I have Aaron Lee's Allstate payment confirmation.
Oh, yeah. And then I had I guess this was an email, though. But I started getting bills for another person's auto insurance. And,
oh, yeah,
and I
I've
sent them
that.
Back. And then a collection agency contacted me.
That's weird.
I had to like send a certified letter stating that this collection was for a Tom Merritt at this other address that was listed on, because I got the insurance information. I was like, for Tom Merritt at this address, somehow the insurance agency swapped his address with mine accidentally. So,
yeah, like for example, I have a Roger Constable. This is the guy in South Africa.
Oh, that's Roger. He has a
policy.
Yeah.
He has a policy with One Life. It's the number one and then Life, one word. It's a newsletter. It's very interesting. I find it so fascinating because it's literally around the world and it's never like something I don't really.
Yeah. So what it should be, this is what it is, right? What it should be is consider those as story starters, right?
Yes.
So like basically you're given this little insight into this person's life, their insurance policy or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And then make up the story around him, you know,
right?
Like
right.
He's yes. The reason why he's gotten this is because he just recently went through a divorce. He had to do this, and then like kind of like piece like just you know what do they call that? It's
well, and you sort of wonder if he hadn't left the job with the insurance agency, would he be A, making enough money to pay this bill, and B, be able to pull some strings to get this resolved?
You know, it's very interesting you bring that up because one of the people that send their bank things to me is a Roger Cannon. See, all these people have a last name that starts with a C.
No, it's Roger. Right. It's the Roger C thing. Yeah, that's totally what it is.
And this one is like, this one was a notice from Wells Fargo saying that its overdraft protection was activated, which means he wrote a check that was too big for the amount of money that he had.
Ooh, okay.
You know, it's not like he doesn't have the money. He just always forgets to transfer it into the account.
And then it's a midlife crisis.
Oh, like this is the one that bugs me. This is from a Raj, and I don't understand why this gets sent to me because his name's not spelled anywhere close. It's a Raj Krishnan. The last name's spelled with a K.
But let's not give out full names here, please.
But this guy is in New York City. And he regularly, every 3 or 4 months, and I know because I get the receipts for these, he orders Domino's in New York City delivery.
What's wrong
I'm
with
sorry.
That?
No. You're in New York City ordering Domino's?
It's not
Domino's?
Against the law to order Domino's pizza in New York City.
No, it's against the laws of good taste.
Yeah, it's like going to Sparrow's.
Listen, I'm not going to say I would recommend it, but here you're getting, this is what I'm talking about. Here's a guy who doesn't think anyone knows that he's ordering. He's like, you know what? I secretly like Domino's. You know, I know some people would criticize me for this, but it's just between me and my Domino's delivery guy. Except you're outing him right now. You're Domino's shaming him.
I was like, yeah, you know, I got off at the airport.
He didn't ask for this, Roger. He's not out there publicizing it.
Domino's shame.
And he spent $13. He bought a medium 12-inch pizza.
Ooh, Carlos Santana's going to start in left.
Robust inspired tomato sauce cheese. Instead of the left side of the pie had pineapple, and the right set had green peppers.
That's weird that
hey,
you know
Darren
that.
Kitchen, we are live on audio, but not on video.
No, I mean it's on the receipt.
I know, but that's really weird.
It's creepy, but it's funny at the same time.
It's a little bit weird.
The French mature dating website's ridiculous. They all like, they say the same thing, and it's just in French. It says, "Oh, hello, my love. I noticed you looking at my profile," or something. It's like, yeah, I guess.
Darren Roger is going through some of the emails he accidentally gets sent to him because he has a Roger C email address.
A so Gmail.
Many
and
other Roger C's. He sails the Roger C's.
The Roger C's. Yeah.
That's the other one. I get a lot at my Twitter because it's at Jolly Roger. I guess it's a popular name for a bar because I always get.
Yeah.
I had a great time at Jolly Roger's drinking with like five people I've never met.
That would be fun to just get every once in a while. I mean, it'd be annoying if it was all the time, but every once in a while, it's just kind of fun.
Roger's
to get
are more fun than mine. The accidental Tom Merritt emails I get are always really boring. Like, here's so, the minutes from yesterday's youth group.
Yeah. The weirdest communication I think I've ever gotten was when I worked at an advertising agency years ago. You know, I had you had to go through the, you could either dial me directly or you could go through the secretary. And I think this call came directly to me. So I picked it up. I said, "Oh, Len Peralta." Or no, I just said, "This is Len." And they said, "Is this Lenny?" And I said, "Yeah, Lenny the Leather Man." I'm like, no,
maybe
not Lenny the Leather Man. He goes, "Oh, I'm sorry. Is this blah blah blah?" So he listed off the number. It was one number. The last digit was off of mine.
No kidding, but it was still Lenny.
Yes. So you dial one digit wrong, you get Len Peralta, the advertising copywriter. You dial the other number, you get Lenny the Leather Man. As it turned out, Lenny the Leather Man is not as salacious as you might think. Lenny the Leather Man was a guy who detailed interiors of cars.
And was looking for an advertising copywriter.
And he was. I could probably do his ad for him.
Come on down to Lenny the Leather Man's detailing shop.
I'll never forget that. I was like,
you know, in a weird way, that kind of reminds me of that series they used to have on, what's CBS's breakfast show? Before they had Charlie Rose on it.
CBS This Morning?
Or something like that. But they used to have a segment called Everyone's Got a Story. And the reporter would literally throw a dart on the wall of the continental United States. You would find the city, and then you would pick up the phone book, and you would just dial a random number. And you would just do like, oh, this person has. Like, the whole premise was that everyone has a thing. Everyone has a story that's fascinating or interesting.
All right, activating video. Is that cool? Everybody got all of their proprietary designs away from the cameras?
Oh, yeah. Prototypes below the camera.
My knees a lot of red.
My shorts below the camera. My waistline is also below the camera.
My waistline is expanding.
Just like the universe. So really relative to the rest of space.
It's actually moving very slowly.
Yeah. See, there you go.
My waistline's expanding like the universe. Very slowly over millennia. I'm actually quite thin right now.
In comparison, you're getting smaller, Tom.
Yes. Relativistically, I am actually getting smaller. That's true, isn't it? We're all getting smaller in relation to the universe.
Yes, we're all getting itsy bitsy.
If you're ever feeling fat, folks, just think of that. You're getting tinier compared to the universe.
Yeah, but that doesn't help when your pants don't fit anymore. That's the most frustrating thing. Is when you have to go, or this is the most insulting. This is the thing that you.
Yeah. How do you think the universe feels about its pants?
Seriously, let's not universe shame.
You know when you got to go a notch up, or is it down on your belt to loosen?
A notch up.
Yeah. And the worst, it's worse. I remember as a kid, I had to make an extra notch. I'm making
a Boy Scout belt. You know, it doesn't have any notches.
When I worked at CNET, I had to make an extra notch.
Yeah, it's those subsidized sodas.
Make an extra notch
all the
other
free
direction.
Sodas, yeah.
Pretty good.
The 25 cents. I guess they were only 25 cents. They weren't free, but so you're good on the Google Mind thing, right, Darren? You good?
Yeah, I don't mind me. I'll just be chatting about AI.
Yeah. Alice, Eve, and Bob. I was that they had me there. I was like, really?
Why? I mean, that's the typical.
No, but they named their that. They named it was cute. I thought it was cute.
Bob, Carol, Ted, and Alice.
It's cute. Yes. I like to play the role of Eve.
Kukul, Fran, and Ollie. Well, I know you do.
So wait a minute, Darren. I know you'll talk about this during the show, but is that like a regular thing that yeah, people name?
It's industry standard.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. I did not know that. So
there's a bunch of player characters for various roles of the hackers and stuff. But those are the
70s. Alice, Bob, and Eve have been trying to hack each other.
Interesting.
You think they finally like just settle down and stop? But no.
Well, today's drawing will. Well, I did not, I mean, obviously, it's kind of a fun little thing.
There's all sorts of ones. You've got, Grace and Heidi and Oscar and Peggy and there's just ridiculous ones.
Srindar.
But Alice and Bob are always, poor Alice and Bob, they've been trying to exchange messages.
Ahmed.
Since the 70s.
All right, we ready?
Yep.
Here we go. Daily Tech News Show is powered by its audience, not outside organizations. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, October 28th, 2016. I'm Tom Merritt. Joining me on a Friday, it's rainy for both of us, Darren Kitchen. How you doing?
Hey, I'm pretty good. It's nice to be in rainy California for once.
Yeah, right? We need it. And thankfully, we have someone who is on the outside of California to give us that non-rain perspective. Len Peralta here to illustrate the show.
Yes, it's not raining here on like Wednesday night when it was raining during game 2 of the World Series. But hopefully the nice weather in Chicago will help the Indians win it tonight. Go Tribe.
All right. As you know, Len, in case you didn't guess from that, Len is in the Cleveland area.
Yes.
We've got a lot to talk about. Google Mind is doing some interesting things with AI, trying to teach them how to hack each other and encrypt all the things. So that's going to be fun. Let's start off with our top stories. George Hotz. You might know him if you're a fan of jailbreaking. He still goes occasionally by the name Geo Hot, has canceled his autonomous car aftermarket add-on, the Comma 1. He had been developing a way to turn any car into an autonomous car. He received a letter from the U.S. National Highway and Traffic Safety Administration asking him 15 questions about design, safety testing, how he was going to market it. And Hotz, who was in China at the time, decided to cancel the project, saying on Twitter that, quote, dealing with regulators and lawyers isn't worth it. So, Darren Kitchen, someone who may or may not have dealt with lawyers and regulators in his time, operating Hack 5 in the Hack Shop, what do you make of this? It feels to me like maybe he was getting frustrated with this project anyway, and this is the last straw.
Well, I can't even imagine. I mean, there's been moments like where you just want to throw your hands up, and all I've had to deal with is ULCE, ROHS, FCC, and several other letters, but I can't even imagine when it comes to the National Transportation Board, like what kind of red tape you must have to go through, especially in a market that's not even defined. I'm just making stuff that's like within the consumer realm, and that path has already been paved. So I can see this just being like absolutely daunting to get those kind of questions where they want the level of detail that you as just a hacker are not really skilled to or equipped to deal with. And outside of what, hiring a bunch of lawyers, like what's George going to do? I mean, come on, this started out as a hacker product, or as a hacker project, to just say like, dude, we can do this too. And I think that, if anything, maybe he'll take what he's done and just been like, dude, open source it, grab the hardware. You guys have fun. At least that way you just bypass all of the regulation and responsibility.
Yeah, and there's been a little controversy over Hotz making claims that some people like Elon Musk say are outlandish, but also Hotz is capable of doing some pretty outlandish things. We've seen him pull off stuff in the past that a lot of people wouldn't have thought possible. So I think a lot of us were curious to find out what he would come up with and how fast he could come up with it. It is unfortunate that he has just, thrown in the towel on this. I can only imagine that these questions, which I'm sure the NHTSA considers to be standard, and honestly, Hotz should have expected to get questions from the NHTSA if you're making an aftermarket car device, don't take into account the things that an autonomous aftermarket product would have. And so he's probably looking at questions. He's like, I don't even know how to answer this. It's not what my product does.
Yeah. Or, I mean, you know, I figured like HOTS is very capable. And I feel like this is one of those things where the hacker mindset of like, just, you know, iterate quickly, get it done. The 80-20 rule applies here, and you can probably get a car to drive, you know, 80% as good as the next self-driving car from the big companies with 20% of the technology. Whether or not that's what consumers or what the highway board is going to allow to be on the roads is a different story, yeah. Hence the questions.
No, that's a really good point. Like, you can make something that jailbreaks a phone most of the time, and when it fails, no one's life is at stake. Right. When you're making an aftermarket car accessory, you have a higher standard you have to meet. I'm not saying that HOTS wasn't aware of that or he wasn't trying to meet that higher standard by any stretch, but it is more difficult, and it's even more difficult to prove. I just sort of wish or hope, maybe, that a visionary who is versed in taking on these kinds of bureaucratic challenges could have, or maybe still will, partner up with him and say, hey, let me run that part of the business, because not everybody is good at every part of a business. And it sounds like he just needs somebody to shield him and let him do the work.
Right. And, you know, short of that person coming into the mix, I would hope that he would take what he's gathered so far. If he's just going to, hey, if you're going to flip the table and throw in the towel, you might as well also toss the code up there and let everybody else kind of, you know, maybe somebody else wants to tackle that.
Yeah. Faraday, Tesla, maybe one of the existing manufacturers, car manufacturers like Honda, Toyota or Audi. There's a guy who knows a lot about this stuff. He may not be the easiest person to fit into your corporate culture. I'll grant you that. But someone would benefit quite a bit. ProPublica has published a report pointing out that Facebook's ad targeting can be used not only to target by ethnic affinity, but therefore exclude people by ethnic affinity. What ProPublica did was posted an advertisement about fighting for lower rents and fighting against real estate encroachment, and then targeted it to particular ethnic affinities. Again, Facebook doesn't call it ethnicity because they don't ask people for ethnicity. They infer it based on the things you like and the posts you make, and thereby excluded real estate information from minority groups. Now, they have showed this to some lawyers who say, yeah, this violates the Fair Housing Act of 1968 because you're not allowed to advertise in a way that excludes any particular ethnic group. Facebook says, first of all, these are ethnic affinities. They're not exactly the same thing as knowing a person's identity. Second of all, the ProPublica ad is not a real estate ad, and the copy itself is not excluding ethnicities, and we would have blocked it had it violated those policies. So there's a debate on whether the ProPublica ad actually violates the Fair Housing Act or not. It may or may not have. It depends on who you ask. And there's certainly a debate on how Facebook allows people to use ethnic information that it has inferred to target advertisements. Darren, how do you feel about this?
Well, it's really interesting because, you know, the algorithm in of itself is kind of benign. Would you posit that the algorithm, which was written by men or people, I mean, is inherently abusive, or is it people that abuse the algorithm?
Right.
Because I'm actually not thinking about this in terms of minority groups and ethnicities and housing and advertising. I'm thinking about this as just straight up technology, because this happens time and time again. So when you abstract it out of that, what we're really talking about is technology that we build because we can. And then we have moral problems with it later when we're like, well, wait a second, it's being used in a way. Is it that it's being used in a way that we don't like, or is it that it's been built in a way that we don't like?
Yeah, that's a really, really good point, because there is on the algorithm level, the algorithm just says, hey, these sorts of data seem to be similar. So the user accounts they're associated with are probably similar in this way. It's then programmers who put labels on that and say, actually, what that group is that the algorithm found probably is Caucasians. This group is Hispanics. This group is African Americans. And then the third stage is what you're saying is, then how do we use that? So I think that's where the debate happens. It's not about the algorithm, it's about the use of it. And there are positive uses for it. If I'm an advertiser and I have a Spanish language version of an ad and an English language version of an ad, I may want to try the Spanish language version of the ad targeted at people who have a Hispanic ethnic affinity because they are more likely to speak Spanish and maybe it will perform better. And I want to try that out. I don't think anyone would argue that that's a bad thing. On the other hand, you could argue that, hey, guess what? You can just look at someone's account and find out if they post in Spanish and target at them that way. You don't have to do this other ethnic affinity. So you start to get into a grayer area of people saying, yeah, but an advertisement towards the African-American community is going to get a better response if it's worded in a certain way versus targeted towards affluent white people.
Right. And so in that case, you know, I feel like this is one of those things where if we, as the people using this technology, can't be trusted to use it appropriately, or we end up, what we do is we start bolting on a bunch of changes and synthetic limitations to prevent us from abusing it. And when those things happen, I typically feel bad for the technology because it wasn't inherently bad. It's just that we have to then kind of shape it to prevent us from abusing that. And it's always like, wow. You know, it's just an interesting reflection on humanity. And then I end up feeling bad for the poor algorithm who was just trying to do its job.
It's like, man, you just asked me to look for patterns. I found some patterns.
Some patterns. And it's like, you get it. You should get an attaboy algorithm, not a, you bad algorithm for doing what I asked you to do.
Who fights for the algorithm? I'll tell you who. Darren Kitchen fights for the algorithm.
I don't know. Let's let the machine learning bots. Yeah. Anyway, whatever. That could really go off.
No. And we're not trying to belittle the fact that there is an issue here that needs to be resolved. And Facebook's saying, if we see an ad that we think violates the Fair Housing Act, we're not going to allow it to be posted. And so now it's a debate over the interpretations of the Fair Housing Act. And it doesn't really have much to do with the algorithm itself at that point. The European Union's Article 29 Working Party sent an email to Facebook Friday expressing serious concerns about sharing WhatsApp data and telling Facebook it needs to stop sharing that data while an investigation occurs. Back in August, you remember we talked about this, WhatsApp changed its terms of service to allow Facebook to match phone numbers with users of both services. So if you signed up for WhatsApp and gave them your phone number, which you kind of have to, and you signed up for Facebook and gave them your phone number there, which you don't have to, they could say, hey, these are the same person and we can aggregate that and target them appropriately. It allows people to share their Facebook contacts into WhatsApp and find friends and things like that. The Article 29 Working Party says, yeah, you change those terms of service and a lot of people who signed up for WhatsApp didn't really realize that, and we don't think that's okay. That working party is made up of the heads of the privacy organizations of the 28 EU member nations. That working party also warned Yahoo over their recent discovered 2014 data breach and the allegations that Yahoo scanned emails for U.S. intelligence agencies. And separately, Italy's antitrust agency is announcing a probe into WhatsApp sharing of data with Facebook as well.
Yeah, so is this a case of just the government saying, stop innovating while we're investigating?
I don't know if it's, I guess you could word it that way, innovating or invading my privacy. It depends on what side of the fence you're on. But they're saying just stop this new policy until we determine if it's allowed or not under EU law.
Right. And so the other way to look at this is that it's like, oh, well, this is a government organization here coming to defend the consumer, to protect those consumers from those evil companies that would otherwise violate their privacy, and for the betterment of their citizens, which may give you some warm fuzzy, or you may realize that it could be looked at as government trying to maintain the balance of power because here are citizens becoming users of companies' products more so than, you know, citizens of their own nationality. And so I look at that as very much like the power struggle between, you know, as we've moved from, you know, different architectures of governance and what it is to be a citizen.
I think that what you would hear people in Europe react to that by saying, sure, you may be right, Darren, but in this case, WhatsApp was a better protector of our privacy before Facebook changed its terms of service. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that's being fought here is this idea that if I sign up for terms of service, The company can change that terms of service at any time, and it really doesn't have to get me to give informed consent. It's gonna throw an okay button in front of me, and most people are just gonna tap it.
Right, and so it used to be that you would just be able to run a piece of software, and if you didn't like the new version, you just didn't have to install it. In this day and age, there's no, you know, especially as everything is, you know, an app within an ecosystem, the control is centralized to the point where you don't really have a choice. It's either you run the latest or you don't run it at all. So, you know, I can see the argument on the government side of saying, hey, that's a little bit like bait and switch, where you're going to, you know, change your privacy policy down the road, and you know no one's going to read that. But if no one reads it initially and no one reads it down the line when they accept the new one, what's the difference?
And you were allowed to opt out of this new policy, but you had to know how to do it. And it meant going into some settings, finding a part of the terms of service and saying, no, I want to be opted out. And it was out there for a limited time. So I think that's probably what they're looking at the most. Employment tribunal judges in the United Kingdom have ruled that two Uber drivers should be considered employees and therefore guaranteed a living wage and other benefits that are guaranteed to full-time employees under UK law. Uber plans to appeal the decision, but if this is upheld, if they don't win their appeal or they're not allowed to appeal, it would mean that in the UK, Uber would have to consider all of its ride-hailing drivers as employees and provide them all the benefits thereof.
You know, I'd love to see them all employees and all get the benefits thereof. I just don't know if it works with the model. Actually, I do know it absolutely does not work with the model. And I'd say that the whole, you know, other side of the fence, because there's only two sides, sadly, to this fence, is that, you know, the freelance side, well, it benefits Uber best. It doesn't benefit the, you know, the driver. So I'm hoping that for this gig economy to really flourish, that a third option will emerge, and a third option that can be, you know, universal and be adopted by, you know, because this problem happens in the EU, it happens in the US, happens everywhere. And so I'm hoping that, you know, the world can get together and say, hey, like, you know, we're not stuck in the 50s here. Like, let's make a new option for employment so that the betterment of mankind. And as, you know, the technology provides opportunities to do gig-based stuff that just wasn't possible before, that we can take advantage of that instead of being afraid of it.
Yeah, it's balancing this new ability to say, I want to choose when I work and what I work on. And be able to decide how much I'm going to make, which sounds great, with companies exploiting that to say, fantastic, we now can just pay you very little and you don't have any kind of bargaining power anymore. The bargaining power in the past was either provided by unions or by the government stepping in and regulating, and that's not there. So it's very easy to go one way or the other and say the government should lay off and let these companies, you know, employ people and people are free to take these jobs or not. It's also easy to go the other way and say these companies are just exploiting people and trying to get around paying them the benefits, and they should be brought to bear and say you can't just pretend that somebody's a contractor when they're working 60 hours a week on Uber. And the fact is, we have a lot more information we can share as employees and figure out where the best gigs are and have flexibility and make an informed decision about trading those off. That shouldn't mean we give up all of our labor protections, but I think, Darren, you hit it on the head. There needs to be new labor protections that are applicable to that situation. So whether it's, hey, you should have the right to, you know, obtain some kind of insurance as a freelancer, and maybe that's an open market, maybe that's a guild-provided sort of thing, I don't know, but there should be a way to bring you those benefits of employment while allowing you to keep the freedom and flexibility and allowing companies to take advantage of that flexibility where they can say, hey, this isn't a traditional 40-hour-a-week 9-to-5 job.
Right, and if the companies like Airbnb, Lyft, TaskRabbit, Uber, and whatnot want to really see the gig economy flourish, they should all be getting behind the concept of some sort of gig-based labor organization, because if their business models are completely tied to simply taking advantage of the benefits that they get from having freelancers instead of employees, then they don't have a sustainable business model in a future where this is a possible way to live and work. So I would hope that we would see all of those companies and many more get behind the whole concept of completely reforming what it means to work.
Sony's PlayStation View television service is now available for Android TV devices. So whether you've got an Android TV set-top box or an Android TV powered television, if it's running Android OS 4.4 or later, you can watch Sony PlayStation View. Sony PlayStation View was already available for Android OS mobile devices. That came last summer. Sony also promised access coming to PCs and Macs soon. And I know that is a stumbling block for a lot of folks out there who otherwise would very much want to sign up for this service, but maybe they watch the majority of their TV on a laptop, the way my friend Brian Brushwood does.
Oh, man, I was so excited about this story at first until I read more into it because, you know, and this is really just like to give you a glimpse of like how I see PlayStation, but I thought this was, you know, about PlayStation TV, their failed attempt at like a lower power Android gaming type platform competitor, you know, the one that had like the ports of the PlayStation 1 and the Vita and the PSP games. And I mean, considering that that was just a little ARM box, very similar to your modern Android TV, that's where my mind went first. And I guess that's because I still equate PlayStation as a gaming platform. And I bet that I'm not alone in seeing it that way. Still, though, I think it's like really smart of them to obviously just piggyback on any existing platform you can, whether it's iOS or Android TV, because, you know, it's better for the bottom line.
Just wish that it's awesome. I wonder, because they launched this thing on PlayStation. I get why they call it PlayStation View. They were trying to drive sales of PlayStation. I think Sony has discovered that they've hit on something here. Because other than Sling TV in the U.S., there aren't any competitors yet. DirecTV's coming with theirs. Verizon has Go 90, and apparently they've got another more high-end version coming down the line. Other people like Hulu are supposedly going to get in this. YouTube is going to get in this. But Sony is ahead of the game right now and doing the things that they need to do. I wouldn't be surprised if this drops PlayStation from the name at some point and says, this is Sony View TV that we provide across platforms.
So I saw it going the other direction as, you know, using that existing catalog as a value add, considering that you've got the Hulus and the YouTubes and the Vudus and that you're more in on all of the different, you know, platforms for this than I am, being such a cord killer. But I would say that I would figure that it would be their entire back catalog of potential, you know, casual or hardcore games that would run on these kinds of platforms that could just be integrated into that system, very similar to how the PlayStation TV was, that they could be like, look, it's entertainment, right? I mean, they're not making any money on that back catalog anymore.
That's a really interesting thing, because Sony does allow you to stream games on the PlayStation 4. Would they want to follow this television service, which is just delivering television shows, channels, and movies, channels, and things like that, with a game service that says, hey, guess what? You can also now play games across platforms on your Roku, on your Apple TV. Of course, they're not on Apple TV with TV, but
I could see, you know, if it's the casual stuff that's not eating into their high-end PS4 market, that being a nice value add, considering they already have the software there. It's, you know, whether or not it's, I don't know. Anyway.
They don't have to build the devices then. They just use the ones
that are exactly.
Yeah. Zcash is launching its cryptocurrency offering Friday. You may not have heard of it, but wow, have investors. They're super excited about it. Many investors think Zcash's ZEC tokens could match Bitcoin in value by the end of the year. Why would they be able to do that? Because investors are so excited by ZEC. It'll drive the value up, which is quite a bit of circular logic. We know that. Zcash uses its own protocol called Zero Cash, which offers anonymous coins called Zero Coins and also non-anonymous coins called Base Coins. So Base Coins work more like Bitcoin does. Zero Cash and Zero Coins use a zero knowledge proof called a ZK Snark, which allows basically both parties to provide each other with verified information without revealing the identities in the process. This hides the sender, the recipient, and the value from anyone not holding a view key. Usually in Bitcoin, you see the entire transaction on the ledger. You'd have to have a view key to view it. And then as a holder of a view key for a transaction, you could share that with whomever you want, but you wouldn't need to. However, ZK Snark requires some intensive proofs, and a lot of people are skeptical, saying this is going to be difficult to scale. Once you start getting a lot of people use this, it's going to grind to a halt.
Man, this is so exciting, though. Geldgeber... Die Welt, I probably mispronounced that. It's, you know, money makes the world go round, right? And if that's what it's going to take to usher on bleeding edge cryptography, then all the better for it. I'm excited about this because, you know, as compared to the anonymity of Bitcoin, this, at least in theory, shows a lot more promise. Whether or not it will stand the test of time, well, only time will tell, because it needs to be peer reviewed and actually out there using, you know, being used. But it's exciting that investors are now like big players in cryptography in a weird sense.
Yeah. Although it does tickle me that investors are very bullish about Zcash because investors are so excited about Zcash.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, it feels a little like 2000, but that's all right.
Yeah. Yeah. Little throwback to the dot-com boom. Never hurt anyone for permanently in most cases.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Don't ask flus. Thanks to all those who participate in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Let's get to the brains of the operation. Google Brain. Google Brain is an AI research division of Google in Mountain View. It's different from DeepMind, which is Alphabet, who owns Google's operation in England. Researchers from Google Brain, Martin Abadi and David G. Anderson, have been training three AIs to try to encrypt their messages or break into encrypted messages. And of course, anybody who knows anything about cryptography will recognize Alice, Bob, and Eve. Those are the names of the three AIs. So if you've already run into Alice, Bob, and Eve in cryptography lessons before, you already know what the roles are for these three people. But for those who are uninitiated, let me explain. Alice is an AI tasked with sending a secure message to Bob. Alice starts with plain text and a key, and then outputs ciphertext. Bob is tasked with decrypting Alice's message. So Bob, the AI, starts with the enciphered text from Alice and Bob's own key. So they both have keys that they can use, the public keys, and Bob's task is to output plain text. The loss function, or the failure condition, for Bob and Alice is Bob's guess can't be too far from Alice's original, and Eve, who we have yet to introduce, can't have a guess that's better than random guessing. So if Eve is better than random guessing at guessing what Alice is sending Bob, the whole system fails. Eve is the man in the middle, or in this case, the woman in the middle, tasked with intercepting and decrypting Alice's message. Eve starts with the ciphered text from Alice, and that's it. That's all she gets. She doesn't get any keys or anything. That'd be unfair. And Eve is tasked with outputting plain text. Her own loss function is actually different. She needs to hit a distance in correct and incorrect bits between Alice's plain text and Eve's guess. So Eve has to guess a little better to succeed than her guess can cause Bob and Alice to fail, if that makes any sense. So Alice and Bob start with a shared secret key. So this is symmetric encryption. And Darren, they didn't do bad, Alice and Bob, but Eve couldn't really crack into their communications. And keep in mind, if you lost in all the Alice, Bob, and Eves, they weren't given a cryptographic system to use. They had to invent one.
Right. All Alice and Bob, the only thing that those two bots were given were a symmetric key to start off with. So essentially, they exchanged the password, if you will, from the get-go. Maybe it was out of band. Maybe they were at a conference and they whispered something in each other's ears. But Eve didn't hear that. So all Eve could see was everything going between Alice and Bob thereafter. And so it's really interesting to see how these bots were able to just develop cryptography. And it wasn't just simple like, oh, we're going to Zor everything. Like it's. I mean, the paper isn't out on exactly what methods they came up with, but it was better than the other bot that was trying to crack it was able to keep up with. And it was really cool to see how over time it was able to just like completely obliterate Eve's ability to decipher what was going on. This, of course, being symmetric key encryption, right? So that just kind of ignores the entire problem of key distribution, which is a huge pain point. And I would love to see this research continue with PKI or public key cryptography or asymmetric cryptography, which is the kind of standards that we see used for, PGP and SSL and all of the other awesome technologies that we take for granted today, because it would be cool to see if this could get better than what humans come up with. But I would say that there's an interesting little problem with trust here, because as opposed to, I don't know, pick a encryption standard, AES, right, where I know what I put in and what I'm going to get out, I have expected results. With the AI, you don't really know what it's going to do. So, yeah, there's that.
Well, and that's the design of the test, right? They instantiated, or rather initialized, all these AIs independently, and all they shared was the same mix and transform neural network architecture, and then did 15,000 test runs. And most of the time, Alice and Bob evolved a system with few errors. In some tests, Eve improved over random, but then Alice and Bob would improve their own technique in response. So you didn't want to give them AES, because that wouldn't prove anything except AIs can use AES. You wanted them to create a cryptography system, and not only that, to adapt it as Eve kept trying to crack the ciphertext.
Right. I mean, essentially, it's 1,000 monkeys with typewriters. And it would have been cool had they come up with, I mean, how weird would it be if they like instinctively, or not instinctively because they can't, they're machines, but what if they had come up with essentially AES? You know, that would just be hilarious.
Right.
Like,
I
wonder what they did come up with. The only thing that has come out is that it was better than Zor,
yeah,
which is really stupid simple.
Well, and that's because they couldn't actually see what the AI was doing internally.
Yeah, they could only see the output.
Because it was encrypted.
The
conclusions, the actual conclusions from the research, are that neural networks can protect communications by solely prioritizing secrecy above all else. You can tell an AI, prioritize secrecy, and it's possible that it will be able to do it without any other tools or instructions. And as for Eve, while it seems improbable that neural networks would become great at cryptanalysis, they may be quite effective in making sense of metadata and traffic analysis. That was what Eve was able to show, even though Eve couldn't crack encryptions. And yeah, they want to take this to asymmetric encryption next, public key, etc. They want to take it to steganography and see what they can do. But it would be an interesting turn for encryption if in the future you didn't rely on AES, you didn't rely on a cryptographic system, you just relied on having trustworthy AIs that would encrypt everything and decrypt things for you.
Right, which would make decryption so much more difficult if it's always a constant mutation, because at least, you know, you can do, there's certain signatures that you can figure out, like, oh, this message looks like DES, or this message looks like AES, or this message looks like Blowfish, whatever have you. And then you start cracking on that cipher. If you're like, I don't even know where to begin with this, it makes it all the more fun. I'm really thankful that that in this test, Alice and Bob were able to create encryption that Eve wasn't able to decrypt, because had it been just so heart-wrenching to read that Eve was always able to crack it, my cyberpunk imagination would have immediately gone to Joshua, who, as we know, the machine learning bot doing World War III over and over and over again, came to the conclusion that the only winning move was not to play. And I'm just glad that the machine did not give up.
Yes. It's an entirely dystopic future if Eve is always winning this, because it means, folks, we can't really secure anything for the long term. Right. Alice and Bob winning seems to say, like, hey, we might get to a system in the future where we don't have to worry as much about cryptography being broken, especially as we do now. I'm still not going to put my money down on either one of those outcomes, because this is very early. But at least the first outcome is hopeful.
Right. What we really have to worry about are the Heidis, you know, the mischievous designers of crypto standards.
Yep.
You know, like the NSA with DES or RSA making weak ciphers by default.
I mean, and, what we really need to worry about are the Martins and Davids who are creating these machine intelligence.
Well, what we would like to see more of are some Wendy's, the whistleblowers. Anyway.
All right. Let's get to our messages of the day. A couple of good ones here today. Murray, the past and future hackers be damned blood donor in Coffs Harbor, Australia, has a story coming out of his neck of the woods. The Australian Red Cross is distributing an email to everyone that has donated to them over the last 6 years or so. So it's around 550,000 Australians. The details are posted by Troy Hunt, a security researcher, has his story about how the breach happened. But basically, everyone involved seems to be practicing responsible disclosure about a hack. What happened was a contractor this is the simplified version. A contractor mistakenly put a file with all of this information on a public-facing web server in September. It was noticed by someone not part of the Red Cross on October 24th. I think I have that date right. And then Red Cross was made aware of it on October 26th. And as Murray says, everyone involved seems to be practicing responsible disclosure, which he says, I'm quite impressed by, to be honest. And the Red Cross's version seems to downplay Troy's version of events, but I'll let you read and decide for yourself. You usually have a great balanced outlook on these things. If you do run with it, feel free to post the general stuff in the email, just not my personal details, if you don't mind. So, yeah, I won't post the personal details, but these are definitely a hack that, you know, is of interest to a lot of Australians because you've got name, email address, et cetera, in there.
Right. And Troy Hunt, awesome security researcher that I've had the great pleasure of hanging out with. He runs the service haveibeenpwned.com, which is, you know, a project that helps you figure out, you can pop your email in and see like how many times with different data breaches that you've been exposed by. I'm reading through this now. It's not clear whether or not this is going to be included in that, but he's usually really, really ridiculously ethical when it comes to this kind of stuff. So good on everybody, all those Aussies, for being, you know, taking the high road on this.
Yeah. And I think Martin's got it right. The Red Cross is downplaying Troy's version a bit, but that is also typical when a security researcher talks and a normal human being talks. It's because security researchers are like, hey, this is really bad and could be taken advantage of. And the normal person at the Red Cross goes, yeah, but I don't think it was. And you know, you're freaking people out. And they're both kind of right. It doesn't seem like any damage has happened yet. That doesn't mean something damaging won't come out of this eventually. And that's what Troy's pointing out.
Oh, you know what? And as of Thursday evening, Troy Hunt has actually permanently deleted the copy that he was sent, and that he's done this before. Actually, he did this when he was sent the information from the VTech breach, which included a bunch of children. So there you go.
Yeah.
Now, whether or not a bunch of black hats have it is.
Yeah, that's something we will probably find out if they do. We may never find out if they don't. You know what I mean? Like the fact that we never hear about it doesn't mean somebody out there didn't have it and just kept it quiet. Marlon from Trinidad posted on our blog about Lenovo's capacitive touch-sensitive adaptive function row that was included on the X1 Carbon laptop in 2014. He's saying, hey, I know, you know, Apple just perfects things, but let's point out that this new strip of lights across the top replacing a function row has been done before. Lenovo's adaptive function row had four sets of keys that it could cycle through. It wasn't universally programmable. And Lenovo took some heat when they introduced it for rearranging the keys on the X1 Carbon. Like they put the tilde down between control and alt or control and delete. They got rid of print screen and insert and put them up in the programmable keys. And so it wasn't exactly comparable to what Apple is doing, but it certainly was the same concept of a strip. And that reminds me that Razer machines also had full color switchblade keys on its game laptops, which were fully customizable. So again, you know, people who don't love Apple so much love to point out that people have done what Apple has done in the past. People who love Apple point out, yeah, but Apple's doing it better. And this is exactly one of those cases where you can think either one of those things.
Right. Wasn't it, in fact, the Optimus keyboard?
OLED, there was also the Optimus with the programmable keys. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the one where every single key was programmable. Maybe this means that we'll see scroll lock hitting the Mac, because that's just the key that's been missing all this time that has been keeping me from that platform, because it's my favorite key.
Scroll lock. Yeah. Or what about pause break? You know.
Oh, I love me some pause break.
Pause break's pretty good.
But people know what pause break is for.
Right.
Scroll lock. I mean, unless you're running WordStar, you probably don't know what that's for.
And yet, here it is, right KVM, here on my keyboard right now.
Aw. Nice. Press it twice and hit up. See what happens.
I'll do that right now.
Okay.
And you folks probably shouldn't do that if you're doing anything important at the moment.
Just hit Alt F4 for ops.
Yes. Hey, and thank you, Darren Kitchen, for joining us today and explaining about Bob, Alice, Eve, Heidi, and more. Where can people find more about these topics and more?
Oh, well, you know what? You can head over to HAK5.org and also see Shannon and Darren. And this week, you can see Sammy Kamkar, who you may know from some awesome hacks such as Roll Jam or Mac Spoof, many of these other really cool hardware tools for doing nefarious things like, I don't know, breaking into cars or spoofing credit cards and things of that nature. He's an awesome hacker, and we had, you know, it's a true delight to have him on the show to just kick around, you know, shoot the breeze about what it is to be a hardware hacker. And I encourage everybody, you know, if you're just like curious about all of these things, this is a great episode for you to get in on. And so it's HAK5.org. And that's where you can find all of our other shows and information on how to get involved in our Sunday meetup at the Hack 5 warehouse. If you want to get involved in the hackathon, we're going to be building all sorts of really cool modules for turtles and duckies and, you know, just having a little code bash. So check that out. The URL for that is codebash.club.
And of course, Len Peralta has been busily illustrating this episode. I see you have three characters, Len.
Yes. Because my mind is always in the 1950s, I took Bob, Alice, and Eve as an AI love triangle. Of course, Alice giving a note to Bob, Bob trying to encrypt the note, but behind him is Eve, who's trying to break into and figure out what exactly is going on. So I understand by talking to Darren earlier that Bob, Alice, and Eve, and Heidi as well, are all things that are known within the hacker world. But this is kind of an interesting way of illustrating how encryption or cryptology works in my crazy little 1950s mind. So there you go.
Hey, man, if it helps you understand encryption better, I'm all for it.
Yeah, there you go. It might be something good for those just starting out to remember how encryption works.
I love the rolling pin.
Yes. Once again, that's total 1950s.
That's Eve's attempt to decrypt. She just uses that rolling pin.
Yeah, exactly.
She's rubber hose decryption, and it's usually pretty good.
It's Eve's implementation of Bash.
Yeah, oh, perfect. I love it. This print is a little bit different this week. We talked about it last week, but this week, if you like this print, you can actually download it right now at my online store, lenperaltastore.com. There's a digital option, and you can also choose the physical option, which lets me, you know, I can print it out, send it to you, all that good stuff. But if you are instantly want this, it's available right now at my online store. As well as, I also want to mention, I just wrote a new comic called Heel Cut, which is dropping next Tuesday on the 1st of November. And you can pre-order that right now at my online store. And Tom's read it, and he gave me a pretty good review. So if you trust Mr.
Really
Merritt.
I identified way too much with a lot of it. Yeah, it's well, really
thanks,
well done.
Thanks. It's a lot of fun. It's very personal, so it might be something you may want to check out. If you've been following me on Snapchat and Instagram, you've also been able to watch that process, and you actually get to see what the finished product is. And finally, of course, the Daily Tech News Show Superfan poster, which I'm doing, where you can actually be drawn into the poster. I've done a few of these. They're turning out awesome. A couple of them are already out there. If you want to be a part of it, you can do that. Just go right to the front page of the store and choose the DTNS Superfan poster. And remember, anybody that purchases it now through the end of the year gets thrown in to be chosen as the actual superfan that's going to be the generic poster for the year. So it's a good idea to get in there and get in early. So lenperaltastore.com.
Thank you to everybody who makes this show possible. Not everybody can afford to do it. David and Mark just had to leave our Patreon. We will miss you, but we thank you for the support you gave us. There are other ways to support the show. DailyTechNewsShow.com/support has them. Big welcome to new patrons, Jonathan Weinman and Andre Christensen. And a huge thanks to Will, who just raised his pledge. He said because he's really enjoying the full show that the patrons get with the pre and post show included in the MP3. You can find out about all that stuff at Patreon.com/DTNS. Our email address is feedback@DailyTechNewsShow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. And of course, our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. Back on Monday with Veronica Belmont and special guest Charlie Oliver, who's going to explain machine learning to us. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Nice. I love that. I love that poster, Len.
Very cool. Thank you. Thank you so much. Darren, let me know how that works out. Let me see if you're able to get it.
And that I just purchased it.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see how this works. I've never done it before.
I'm sending it to the Epson right now.
That's it. Now that's pretty dang cool. You got to admit.
I just got to choose the matte paper. In fact, I'm going borderless, so this is going to look really good.
That's pretty dang cool.
Never mind. It's actually not a full bleed picture. So
no, it's not. I don't make them full bleeds.
Oh, really?
No.
Is that because hang on. When I normally order from you, you actually print those yourself and mail them. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So what do you use? Like an Epson, an HP?
It's an Epson, and I use just the matte paper. And it comes out, it's like a laser, so it comes out really, really shiny and tight and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, but they're great prints. Everybody listening should, the digital is awesome because I just downloaded it.
That's crazy, man. That's pretty amazing. I'm really excited to see how that works out.
It was right at checkout. I just got a nice little download now right there.
That's so cool.
4.5 megs. Yeah, really high res.
So when did you actually order it? Was it while he was talking?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I've got it over at the Len Peralta store, so I just check out like that.
And, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's 2550 by 3300, so that's, pretty
decent. It's high res.
It's printing right now.
Yes.
It's actually coming out of the print. Yeah.
So that's crazy. What's your turnaround time here? It's like 5 minutes.
Yes. I mean, literally, after we complete the show, you can have this print in your hand. It's just amazing.
I don't mean to get all QVC, but that's pretty crazy.
It is crazy.
Like I know this is not a big deal. Like, yeah, it's digital. I downloaded it. I printed it. What's the big deal, Tom? But it's just kind of hilarious.
It brings like a new level. Look at that. Yeah, oh, there my it gosh. Goes. That's so crazy. That is probably.
I think that looks pretty good. Yeah, it's coming out great.
Oh, my gosh. That's about as good as me being there with you and actually doing that. For you.
Yeah, no, I think I'm going to do this from now on because I mean
not everybody has the kind of printer Darren's got. I'll grant
right,
you that.
Exactly. But. Exactly. Oh, but it gives you that option though.
This WF 7010 is only $100.
So you could have.
I don't want to boast about a printer or whatever, but this changed my life. I absolutely love this printer and the quality that I get from it is
wow, that's so cool. I just drew that right here.
Yeah, I mean, hey, for a $100 printer, and I get like a really high quality print of Len's work, you figure if you buy like, what, 100 of Len's drawings, it really like amortizes out well.
Yo, yeah. Stephanie Ray in the chat room asks a very pertinent question. How far is Cleveland from the Bay Area?
Okay. Did we
like how far apart are you?
I think we may have beaten a station wagon full of zip discs.
Possibly. I'm pretty sure you did.
Yeah. I feel like we're like demonstrating like email or something from like.
I know it's like not like anything amazing.
No, I know exactly. It really
but
is.
But it is
not.
Sort of a cool. I mean, it is cool in that Darren actually has the art that I created for the show right in his hand now.
Tangibly.
Yes.
It looks great. Like on the screen.
When we were young, you couldn't do this, kids.
Yeah. Tinvec says we're about 2,500 miles away from.
2,500 miles, wow. Like that. Like yeah, that I tell you.
Divide that by the pixels, 2550 by 3300, and you've got, how many pixels per mile per hour?
Yeah. So yeah. Here's something interesting too. If you like, for example, people, I got a question about the comic that I'm doing, and someone said, "Is there going to be a print option?" I said, "I'm not going to do a print option right now. It's just a digital download." But who's to say, man, if you can download it and you have a nice printer, you can print it out. You can it's not like an actual comic book, but it is at size, right? It is the size of a comic book and it will print out and you can do that if you want. It's pretty amazing. I'll probably let you figure out the show name here. Huh?
Yeah, I don't know if Roger's having issues or he got called away, but I think I'm going to go with Alice in Cryptoland.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
There's also, that's an innovation of my privacy.
Right. Yeah. I'm playing devil's advocate on the whole new privacy thing. I mean, I think that it's great that they're like standing up for consumers. I'm just saying, don't think for a minute that they're doing it just for the warm fuzzies.
Do you have a preferred title? Oh, there's Roger.
Sorry, you guys kept going on about the print. I thought you guys were like, I didn't want to interrupt it.
No, that's okay. We were pretty excited about it.
It's like, you guys are like, all right, I don't know. Well, that's an innovation of My Privacy is Top, followed by Alice in Cryptoland. Although Alice in Cryptoland is pretty funny. Yeah. I like that.
Alice in Cryptoland.
Yeah, I like that. To be honest, that's the first
thing. I think I'm going to go with that, but if you want to read some other of your favorites in there, just to give credit.
There's the Attaboy algorithm.
I liked that. Attaboy algorithm.
And an innovation of My Privacy. Automatic racism, the Facebook story. Google Brains. Alice and Eve, Bob. Oh, Alice and Eve should be Alice and Eve, comma, Bob and Weave cryptography. Get it? Bob and Weave is what you.
Yes, do Bob and Weave. Okay, it took me a minute. Now I get it.
That's right. When you put you need a comma between Eve and Bob. This is an A B conversation. Eve your way out.
Cute.
Race book. Race is kind of predictable. Zcash is Blitzkrieg on Bitcoin. Allison Zcash. I like Alice in Cryptoland.
I bet it's been done before, but I still like it. What is that sound?
Oh, sorry, I'm printing an.
That's the printer. Okay,
that's the printer again. So I don't know if Len thought about this, but the digital one,
you can print this many times.
Copy. Yeah. I don't know if that violates the license. One for home and the office.
I don't know. I mean. Whatever.
What I'm actually doing is I'm printing the other one on a Super B, so it's going to be 13 inches by 19 inches. I want to see if it scales real well.
You know, it doesn't. I don't. You know, because
what's a Super B?
Super B is a page size, kind of like
A1. Oh, yeah,
the page size Super B. I got you.
I was thinking you were printing on, and okay, you're printing.
Yeah, I got this much better presentation mat paper that I wanted to try out. And it's looking pretty good.
That's pretty cool. I mean,
are you going to go back retroactively and update some of the previous?
I don't know. That's a lot of work, because then I would have to actually, it is a lot of work. So I think it's from now on, okay, I'll be doing that option. Because there's enough in there that people, if they want to order a print, they would still need to order. They can order. They can download that one and also print out.
I was also waiting for Len to start drawing Super B.
Right. Well, I just wanted. I was like, it'd be nice to get another copy of Quanto. Right. The first ever the Quanto supercomputer from DTNS episode 2 or something.
Yeah. No, it was one. Wasn't it?
Oh, was that the first one?
I think that was the first episode.
Was it really?
First episode?
Quanto
was, wow.
The was first it? One that Len did.
Yeah, that's what it is.
The first episode didn't have Len on it. The very first, very first. But the first one we had Len on.
Yeah.
That's great. Wow. Quanto was the first?
Yeah, Quanto was the first.
There we go. That's what I'm talking about. Look,
look at that. It's great.
Super B sized paper.
That's plenty high resolution to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's kind of why I wanted, I was wondering if the Quanto one was, because he's near and dear to my heart, and I want a big version of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we thought about retroactively doing that with the 100 other prints, but it's a lot of work. Plus, plus it's their hosting, so it turns into bandwidth issues and stuff like that.
Well, you can do a series, the 2014, download a big zip of all of them.
I choose 10 prints and I do them for the year. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'll do that. I'll do that option for the year or best of, so maybe I'll create that. And then that's how I'll do that.
It's good stuff. Looks great.
That's awesome. That's really, really cool. That's amazing that actually happens. next Friday, I don't think I'm gonna be able to be here, but I am still gonna draw the top story just like I did last year, and then just, you know, put it up there.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So you'll be out the 4th then?
I'll be out the 4th.
Got it. Deleting you only this instance.
Well, fine. We'll be here.
Sorry. No, I'm hosting an auction that night, so.
Oh, really?
Do you have to do the whole chant?
The chant?
You know,
We got 5 over here.
No.
I hear 6. There, I hear 6. 6 goes to
no,
the man,
it's
and they
for
fly
my over. It's for my kid's school. I'm the MC, so I have okay. to
MC Peralta.
Yeah.
MC Lenny.
You know,
I was
talking about if I were a baseball player, what I would wear. And I think I would wear one of them big old, like, you know, necklaces, you know, like I would have a huge gold necklace around. And I think I would look, and then also the other thing I said I would do is I would grow my hair super, super long and put it all like in a bun inside my helmet. So when it took it off in between innings, it would be like this really long flowing.
Is that like
mane.
A huge top knot?
Yes. No, it'd be a huge flowing gold mane.
Well, when you undo the top knot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it'll only be underneath my helmet.
Right.
So, but I think
so you'd want it so you could just take off the batting helmet and it would just cascade out.
Exactly.
I get it.
But everything around it is just like shaved short. So you just got like
Fabio
really,
Peralta.
You got this look like, oh man, that guy's got really like short hair. There's a guy on our team, Ramirez, who does that. He's it's not like flowing mane, but he's got like bright yellow afro underneath there that he is. It's always surprising when he takes off his batting helmet.
I'm just thinking of you with a long flowing mane
now. It's hard not
like
to.
That needs to be the next print.
Yeah.
And with the jean jacket on too.
Yes. Obviously. Oh man, I should have probably worn that today.
We were gonna do
that. Oh, we totally forgot. Yeah, I forgot to do that.
Yep. Man. Yeah, and Monday's Halloween, or we could have done Halloween costumes.
Oh well.
Are you guys gonna dress up for Halloween?
I'm dressing up on Sunday for the Code Bash hackathon at the warehouse.
Oh, cool. That's great. What
yes.
are you gonna, do you, is it a secret? Your costume?
Yes, it's a secret even from me at this point.
I see. it's like that, is it?
Yeah, that's that good.
Yes, I am dressing.
I know you've been working on a costume.
Yeah, today's my daughter's birthday. Tomorrow's my birthday. So we're having a big birthday party, group birthday party,
costume party.
Lynn. Thank you. And I'm going to be Deadpool.
Yeah, you know, you were telling us that it was coming along good.
Oh yeah, it's really, really good, and the weather is nice and cool and crisp, and so I can just wear that and be warm.
So you can walk around and crack wise.
Yeah, the only problem is that I wore it once to pick my son up from work, and
you've been banned from picking him up.
No, yes, he would not even look at me or walk at me. But I fit the eyes with this special mesh that. Then after I was like running around and trying to be all Deadpoolish, I realized there was no airflow.
Oh no!
So I'm like, oh man, I can't really start dancing because it was like there's not too much airflow going in. So I have to kind of sit and be, you know, or not wear that helmet for too long.
I'm supposed to go to the YouTube space is having this Halloween event. It's not like a private party. It's a public event. And I'm supposed to dress up. So I think I'm just going to put on my lab coat. I'm just going to be super lazy and put on the lab coat and be like, I'm scientist guy.
You should put science. An S on your chest and go as super lazy.
Super lazy.
That would actually be more work than putting on the lab coat.
Roger, you should go as Roger C.
All the Roger C's. Yes.
I'll just come out with... One hand is like airline tickets, a new Apple product, and a brochure from Home Depot for new flooring. And on the right will be a bunch of dating advice What else? Pharmacy prescriptions, bar menus of various Jolly Roger bars from around the world. And I'll just be mixed up.
Slippery Knot says that you should just put on a blue wig and be Rick Sanchez from Rick and Morty.
Oh yeah, with the with the lab coat.
Yeah.
If I had still a blue good. Wig, I totally would do that.
Just go to one of those Halloween superstores.
Totally.
Also a lot of work. Actually, you know what? That's really ridiculous. There's one walking distance from my house, to be honest.
That's so much work. Opening the door.
No, Ali could be Morty.
I'm sorry, Rick.
I don't know, Rick. Something's wrong.
I can't really do the. I can do a Marty okay, a Morty. I can't do Rick as well.
Rick is he talks like this, man.
He talks like a New York.
Well, he talks not like cab Dan driver, Harmon. Is what he talks like.
Yeah. No, that's Justin Roiland. I thought.
No, but he's imitating Dan Harmon. Apparently.
Oh, is that what?
Yeah, that's his imitation of Harmon.
Listen, Morty.
That's what Brushwood told me. He heard. In one of the Harmontown episodes. That's funny.
Friend of a cousin of the man that cuts my daughter's hairs.
Yeah, Eileen has a pink wig, but not a blue wig. That's just how lazy I'm trying to be. I've even got safety goggles that I could wear. I could actually just like stand my hair up on end and I could go as Doc Brown.
Oh, and 1,000 gigawatts.
Yeah, see that I could do. 1.21 gigawatts.
No, my God.
It's not you, Marty. It's your kids. It's not very good, but it's good enough.
We're going. We don't need roads.
I've been fighting a sore throat across space and time.
That's a horn heavy soundtrack.
That's Alan Silvestri for you, right? He did the
classic
music.
Classic Silvestri.
It's weird how you can kind of pick out who composed what soundtracks. Like, James Horner is very identifiable. Like, doesn't matter what movie he does. It's just, he always has those trumpets.
Well,
like,
yeah, Mike Post, too.
Star Wars guy. Who's Star Wars
John
guy?
Williams.
John Daily
Williams.
Daily Tech News Show is
us from, he hates it when you call him Star Wars guy, by the way.
Danny Elfman's another person.
Movies.
You know what I call Danny Elfman? I call him the guy from Oingo Boingo, just to piss him off.
He probably likes that. He's like, yeah, no, man, nobody recognizes my work with Oingo Boingo.
For the longest time, he was like, he wanted nothing to do with Oingo Boingo.
I am not. He wrote that biography, I Am Not Oingo Boingo, and then later, after he came to terms with it, he wrote the biography, I Am Oingo Boingo.
I'm just a Boingo. I'm not Oingo. It's like Hootie and the Blowfish. Darren Rucker isn't, what's his name? Is it Darren, right, or no?
Darren Kitchen. He's right here, Roger. He's
no. On the call. from Hootie and the Blowfish, and everyone kept calling him Hootie. It's like, that's not my name. That's
Darius
name.
Rucker.
Oh, yeah.
Darius.
That's like Pink Floyd, people asking where Pink is. Which one of you is Pink?
Never heard that. That's fantastic.
That's right, Bio Cow. Darius Ruck something.
I can't work.
All right. We are uploaded. We are posted. We are ready for action. Thank you, everyone, for watching or listening.
Yay. Cool. We are ready to privately see the prototype, not live on video.